Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Paul Wagner, also known as Big Daddy Wags, and three former employees of Wagner Music, Howie Shear, Denny Libby, and Tom Ozzie Osfar. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is October 18th, 2015. And today we're talking with Paul Wagner, also known as Big Daddy Wags from Wagner Music, and three employees from Wagner Music, Howie Shear, Dennis Libby, and Tom Ozzie Osfar. Let's start by going around and getting your full name, your date of birth, and hometown, please.
Howie Shear, January 1950, and hometown Minneapolis. High school was North High in Minneapolis.
Dennis Libby, alias Denny Libby, and I was born February 26, 1947. Grew up in a house in Robbinsdale that my grandparents built in 1926. Now I live in Wayzata.
My name is Paul Baldy Wagner from Waconia. I was born on August 20th of 1938, and I graduated from Waconia High School in 1956.
Ozzie Osfar, September 52, from Minneapolis, Brooklyn Park, actually, at the time.
Okay. Let's also get your high school and year of graduation.
High school was still North High, Minneapolis, 1968.
Dennis Libby and I graduated in Robbinsdale High School in 1965. Just had my 50th high school graduation ceremony, and for 25 years I was the entertainment chair, so I hired all the entertainment and all the bands, and my buddy Steve Miller just played at my 50th.
Tom?
Osseo, 1970.
Paul, what's your earliest memory of hearing rock and roll music?
Would be Bill Haley and the Comets. And boy, that was exciting, coming from a country western and old-time music, of course, from a German community, and we were big into old-time music and dances, polkas, waltzes, schottisches, and all that kind of stuff. But definitely was whoever he was that I said.
Bill Haley and the Comets.
And there was a local group that had a Spanish name that played rock and roll.
Augie Garcia.
Exactly. Augie Garcia. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Augie Garcia was a big influence of the 50s. You know, we're talking middle 50s rock and roll scene. So
where did you see him play?
Place called Sherman Station out by Winstead. It was a liquor joint, and he would play there occasionally on weekends and just jam the place. Now we're talking now 1950, I want to say maybe 58.
Now in Waconia, I believe there was a ballroom, the Paradise Ballroom.
Exactly, yes.
Did you frequent that venue?
Again, when I was growing up, I frequented actually in Lent time more than anything else, because they had roller skating back in that day, that the ballrooms weren't functioning until Easter Sunday, that you didn't dance during Lent. So they had roller skating. So I did a lot of roller skating. I knew the owner of the place. But as far as music, not the rock and roll. I know later years that they had a lot of rock and roll stuff going on at the ballroom. But I did a lot of old time dancing there. In the day. And I had a group when I was in high school. We were called the Restless Rockers, and we played a gig out there one time.
What did you play?
Trumpet. I was a trumpet man, and my brother, who is a fantastic piano player, kind of like the Roger Williams type, that but he could play music. My brother was in the band. There was a guy by the name of Norval Schmunke. People from Waconia, they'll remember, old timers will remember, was a heck of a tuba player, and I never knew it until that. But, and then there was a Jim Brobeck. Jim Brobeck was playing the baritone, and I on the trumpet, and Normal on the bass. And then there was Charlie Gamarick, Mr. Gamarick, because he was my band director at that time, was another great trumpet player. and my brother played the piano. And I think we played Rock Around the Clock about 16 times that night. we didn't know too much music, but it was a great time. So that was my...
Your brother could play anything.
Yes.
Did you do old-time music as well as rock and roll?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I had an experience. I played with a... I had an offer one time, but my mother said absolutely not of playing... I could have went with... I'm trying to think of who the old-time band was at that... Ivan Cale. Ivan Cale was a local guy from that had a local old-time band to play, and he was a trumpet player to come along with him and play trumpet, but I never pursued that.
Kind of curious, when your band played Rock Around the Clock instead of old-time songs, how did the audience react to that?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, it was a teen dance. We were putting it on for the, we had a hot rod club. Cam Snappers. We had a, you know, back in the 50s, it was a big deal to get plaques that you'd put a chain on from the bumper of your car and have a hot rod club. So we were called the Cam Snappers. And then we were putting on a dance that night to raise funds, you know, a fundraiser. So, yeah, a lot of kids from, I want to say that, you know, a big crowd at that time, maybe 100 people or something like that. But that's one of my recollections of my stay in Waconia. One thing about Waconia that if you go out there and you talk about Paul Wagner, they'll say, who? But if you say Baldy Wagner, they'll say, oh, yeah, Baldy. Yeah, that guy, he could really hold his... hold his liquor and play a heck of a trumpet. That's all they remembered me for.
When did you first decide you wanted to open up a music store?
This actually was a brainchild of my brother Charles. Charlie was teaching in the Minneapolis school system that time at down in South Minneapolis, and he was giving piano lessons on the side. So he was buying a lot of music and all that kind of stuff, so he came up with the idea, rather than going to Schmidt's or Gross and all that, and buy his supplies and, you know, some instruments for some kids when they were starting out, that why don't we start up a music store? Because then we know, there was a place called Hagelin's, was a wholesale music company in North Minneapolis. And so he said, let's get a music store together. And at that time, there was a fellow from my, a Merle Kirsch, that ended up owning Dart Music. I think Dart still, Merle passed away not too long ago, but a few years ago. But anyway, at that time, he was working for Heiliker Brothers. And so I got to know Amos, who was Soma Records, and his brother,
Danny.
Yeah, Danny Heiliker, and that crew. What a great crew. And so Merle set us up with, helped set us up in a music store, and my dad had a tire shop in Waconia, and we just took a little area that was maybe, I want to say, 6 feet deep by 12 feet wide. I had the front window on, we put in records, and it was mainly records, and we handled a Voice of Music stereos. I'll never forget about that. It was a heck of a machine for the price. And so Merle, again, back to Merle Kirsch, was the, he worked for Target, or well, he worked for Heiliker's supplying records for Target, and so we got into the record business. Actually, when we started the music store down in Minneapolis, is that we were more into records than anything else, but so that was it. And we'd be open Friday nights. I'd come out there Friday nights and Saturday during the day, and just sell records, and my brother would be out there giving piano lessons to the local people. That's how we mainly got started. And
so in the store, you sold records only, or did you sell musical instruments?
Well, yeah, you could buy guitar, harmony guitars, you know, which were your beginning guitars for, that was, we bought those through Hagelin. And I, at that time, too, was giving private lessons on band instruments. I had gotten a degree for music education, so, you know, we sold clarinets and trumpets, whatever the kiddies needed to start on. And yeah, it was mainly just more of a general music. It wasn't rock and roll at that time. It's more of a general music store. That came about later.
What years was the store open in Waconia, and what was the name of the store?
The name was Wagner Music, and it must have been 66, 1966.
Do you remember the street it was located on?
119 South Olive. If you happen to go out in Waconia now, that's where I grew up, and there's a place called Moco Monkey. It's an ice cream parlor. And that's in the old building. We had the new building. There's a bar that used to be my dad's tire shop. You know, the building's still there from where I grew up. Moco Monkey, is that it? Yeah, something like that.
So when did you decide to relocate to North Minneapolis?
Well, that was kind of something that fell out of the sky. My father-in-law kind of dealt in real estate somewhat. In other words, he'd get repossessed properties for, you know, he'd make loans to people. He was in the lumber business and did a lot of financial assistance to builders and business people. And just happened one day, he said, I've got a building available up on Penn Avenue. It was an old real estate building. He says, would you be interested in starting a music store? I said, wow, this, you know, let's go take a look. And went in there, and it had the makings of being a good music store. So, or a place to open a music store. So that's how that got started. Was a lot of times my beloved wife, love her dearly, that, you know, what happened to me and all that kind of stuff. I kind of say, well, if it wouldn't have been for your dad saying, hey, I got a building to start a music store, I maybe would have never got started in the music business. But that's how that came about.
Now, did your brother make the move with you to North Minneapolis?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, we were in there. Actually, my brother at the time, before this, when we were out in Waconia, we went and checked out Vox Amplifiers. There was a Mike Keating that worked for us out there that was a heck of a guitar. He was a Chet Atkins-type guitar player. You know, he loved Chet Atkins and that. And he convinced me or mentioned that there was Vox Amplifier was out, and he had noticed that a lot of bands were playing on Vox, and they were starting up new dealerships. So Mike and I went down, I forget where it was, someplace in maybe St. Louis Park, at some place where they had the setup there, and ended up signing up for Vox Amplifiers for the dealership in Waconia. I'll never forget it because they had a big shot. They were ready to take an order, and he says, well, how many Super Beatles do you want? I said, what? I said, well, how much are they? Now, this is going to, here we go. He's got the price tags here. Well, for crying out, Denny Libby has just given me the price list of, is that all they were? My goodness, I thought they were over $1,000. Well, anyway, Super Beatle Deluxe stand was $800.
Retail.
Yeah, retail. But he's got the cost there, too. Music business, 100% markup. We pay $400, mark it up 100%, where it's $400, we supposedly charge $800.
Now, we have to mention here that the Beatles played on Vox amplifiers.
Exactly.
And that obviously was had a huge impact on the Vox company.
Exactly. The problem is, what happened to the Vox amplifier, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe these guys can correct me on that, Marshall,
yep,
was the original manufacturer. He came out with the Vox. The story I heard is that
T. Merson,
he built the Vox amplifiers for the Beatles. That I think the Beatles and the English groups were the first ones to play on Vox.
As tube type amplifiers.
Yep. Exactly. And yep, they were tube type, and they were an awesome amp. Whirlpool was the big honcho. They were the big one. Whirlpool bought out RCA, I think it was. And then that went down to Thomas Organ. And Thomas Organ bought Vox. They bought the name from Marshall. And so they came and Americanized it and made it, changed it to Transistor. And, it, you know, you see the old Vox that they were kind of just a straight, small, yeah, there's a picture shown here of the history of Vox. That's what the Beatles were playing on.
That's the Vox AC30.
Correct.
Did you sell that particular
no.
one?
No, by the time we got it, it was all transistorized. Ours was where the, you know, this style here that on that pitch.
The bigger ones.
Right.
And those were the Super Beetles, they called
them. Right.
But they had a full line that was all different sizes.
Yeah, they had a small ramp that I think it was called a Cambridge or something like that for
beginners. Cambridge, the Viscount.
Yeah, Viscount. But then they had the Royal Guardsman. Yep. Long story short, back to getting that. Yeah, there we go. Here's the Royal Guard. The one we first bought from our first order was the highest I went was a Royal Guardsman. And I thought the guy, it was like a half a Beetle bottom with the top. So we bought a Royal Guardsman and a few others, a couple small ones that day. I remember Don Lang was the rep for Vox in our area, and he kept telling the guy from California, he said, they're just a small dealer. They're just a small dealer. Don't get excited. He's expecting a big order, so we started off. But once we got down into the Twin Cities, though, at that time, though, my brother was involved with a place called Paul's Place in South Minneapolis. Paul's Place was more of a repair shop or that, but he started, we can talk about it now, bootlegging Vox amps in from our store. You know, that at that time, in fact, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, The Litter was the first group in Minneapolis that ever played on Vox, and they bought it through Paul's Place.
Now, what do you mean by bootlegging
the Vox amp? Bootlegging, well, it's saying that... Park Music had the franchise for Vox. Back in those days, you had franchises. I think they became illegal that you can't sell them. But anyway, at that time, that supposedly, and Thorpe had a franchise for Vox in St. Paul. Thereby, you could only buy from them.
In the Twin Cities.
In the Twin City area, right. Well, here's Waconia. We're outside the deal, so... Paul's Place started selling amps. That was kind of a deal that my brother had set up with.
But they purchased them from you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And so we kind of called it bootlegging.
Outside of the franchise network is what it was. Well, what they were doing.
Okay, that's whatever.
Just to clarify, according to my history that I read on the internet last night, the very first band in England to use Vox amps was actually the Shadows.
Oh, okay.
But obviously, they were nowhere near as popular as the Beatles. So when the Beatles were shown playing on Vox amps on the Ed Sullivan Show and prior or shows after that, obviously the Beatles were much more popular than the Shadows.
Right.
As long as I'm talking about that, apparently the first band in the United States to use the Vox amp was a group called the Brothers Grimm, which I have no idea who they were. They are listed in the Vox history as playing Vox amplifiers in the early 1960s as the first American group. So, a little history there.
Awesome.
What was the address of the store in Minneapolis on Penn Avenue?
3449 Penn Avenue North.
And what time period did you open for business there?
We're saying fall of 67 to 70? What are we saying? 60.
Yeah.
Not very long. I mean, it in perspective to... What we think about.
Now, I assume this was a much larger store than your place in Waconia.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Waconia was just a storefront type situation, so I don't know what that... You know, back a little bit about more of that history. Of when it became Americanized and transistorized, they had a... T. Warren Hampton was the promoter for Vox amplifiers through Thomas Organ. Just... And he went into the groups in Hollywood, all the Los Angeles groups, and whenever you'd see anybody, Paul Revere and the Raiders, the Monkees, whatever, all those popular groups, they were all playing Vox amplifiers. In fact, I've got one where I see Eric Burton and the Animal. Eric Burton's playing a Jaguar keyboard. Yeah, and you know how great those were. But the problem is when they Americanized it, that with the transistors, they started having problems with it. We somehow discovered that the problem was a little transistor.
The watchdog.
Yeah, watchdog. So he wouldn't blow speakers.
Yeah.
So we got, so by the time we got rolling with ours, Vox, as far as the name, was bad. Most of the groups had gotten away from, you know, either went back to Fender or acoustic or something like that.